सत्कर्मेषु
वयो धर्मार्थकामेषु
विविच्छयं च मानव to go back to the spiritual world with Krishna. So Krishna is giving him all the ammunition he's going to need in the form of spiritual knowledge and the nectarian instructions coming from the lotus lips of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And here he's introducing Dattatreya. In some parts of the Bhagavatam, Dattatreya is condemned as being an impersonous and sometimes a teacher of Mayavadi philosophy. He is not he himself, because Dattatreya of course is one of the incarnations of the Lord. Shaktivesh avatar, in a very similar category with Lord Buddha, different philosophy, but in the category that they are, they acted on behalf of the Lord in order to bewilder atheistic persons. So that although we accept them, we offer them due respect as an avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, generally we don't buy into their philosophy. Although some of it, where it actually concurs with actual Vedic thought, that is acceptable. In the same way, we don't follow Lord Buddha because he rejected the Vedas. Yet, some of his philosophy can be found within the Vedas, and therefore we can't just reject outright everything the Buddha said. Though we generally don't follow his philosophy, but it's not that if he says something that's actually in the Vedas, that we would reject that. Dattatreya is in the same category, that where the information he is giving actually concurs with the Vedas, then that is acceptable. Krishna is pointing out that part here. Other parts, which are not acceptable, they are not followed. So we have to be a little careful here. The same with the, you know, the teachings of Buddha. We certainly don't offer them any disrespect. The same with Lord Jesus. Srila Prabhupada was here in Melbourne, and he went to the Christian monasteries and invited him to give a talk, and they asked him what his opinion of was of Jesus, and he said that he is a guru. And here also, Dattatreya, as Jesus Christ is a Shaktivesh avatar, Muhammad is also accepted as a Shaktivesh avatar, the Buddha, Dattatreya. In this way, we accept them as our guru, but we also have to understand their specific missions. You know, there is some reference that in order to, you know, preach a religion amongst the meat eaters, that certain, you know, avatars would appear. I don't want to mention any names. But, so, you know, there are some philosophies. Some of the information, of course, is certainly based upon Vedic understanding and concurs with Vedic understanding, and some of it is religious principles, which is making huge concessions for people who are quite simple or people who are quite atheistic, because as Vaishnavas, or as aspiring Vaishnavas, we are trying to follow the path of pure devotional service. We certainly don't follow these other religions, because there are many, many parts of those religions which are specifically meant to make big concessions for sinful people and, in some cases, atheistic people. but we can accept this portion here, which Krishna is giving. Any questions on Dada Chaitanya, just while we're on that point?
Philosophy
is meant for whom exactly? My values and persons.
Similar to Shankaracharya?
Yes, similar.
And that part is mentioned in Vedas, or no? The Mayavada part is.
No, Mayavada is not mentioned in the Vedas, that's the problem. The Mayavada philosophy that there is no variety in spiritual existence, that is not verified anywhere in the Vedas. These personalities are very expert at bewildering people who want to be cheated. You know, Srila Prabhupada, of course, used to quote his spiritual master that for those who want to be cheated, then Krishna will send a cheater. A very expert cheater. Just like, again, when Srila Prabhupada was in Melbourne, there was a couple of ladies came to the temple here and did an interview with Srila Prabhupada about that they were from a particular news magazine. And one of the girls said that she began to ask a question, and she led into the question saying that the purpose of spiritual life is to find the guru within oneself. Can you comment upon that? Srila Prabhupada, of course, first asked, well, who said that? And she couldn't remember. She didn't even know. She was literally quoting something, but really had no idea where it had come from. So as she sort of fumbled around trying to maintain a poise of intelligence, some of the devotees actually knew where the quotes, and they actually mentioned that, oh, this, Yogi here says it, and this one here, this. So, of course, now Srila Prabhupada was very quick to point out that if people are teaching that there is no need for the guru because you have the guru within, then why is he teaching? It's like if you all come into the Bhagavatam class and, you know, I teach you that, you already know, what I'm going to say. But there's nothing, there's nothing, I do not need to teach you. So why come? You know, imagine every day you come in. Every day you come into class, and every day I tell you, I do not need to teach you anything, because the speaker, the guru, is within your heart. So, after a while you think, that's ridiculous. Why, why take that instruction? It has no meaning. Why go to him to hear such a ridiculous statement? There's no value in him sitting there. There would be no value in me sitting there saying that, right? So, and the same, some of them actually write books, and in their books they say, books are illusion, books are maya. There's no value in reading books, but ultimately they're maya. So why write that book? They'd write the book saying, don't read books because the books are mine. But people are really, really foolish, and they actually, they just take it line and sinker. Of course, when Prabhupada pointed that out, all the devotees burst out laughing. Prabhupada himself laughed, and even the girl, realizing her foolishness, she even laughed. And how ridiculous, but it sounded like a very intelligent question, a very intelligent comment, someone making a pretense of, background or spiritual understanding. But really, as Prabhupada said, a fool revealed as soon as they open their mouth. As long as they keep their mouth closed, then, they may look reasonably intelligent. As soon as they say something and they are a fool, then they're immediately going to reveal that. So there are so many people who are cheating the world in so many different ways. They're very expert here amongst them, Dattatreya, very, very expert. Lord Buddha, very, very expert at cheating people. Because they're actually incarnations of Krishna, and Krishna says they're empowered by Krishna. Krishna says among gamblers, cheaters, I am gambling. Yeah, the ultimate cheat, right? Krishna's the biggest cheat. So, again, people take your spiritual life, but they, this is thousands of years ago, what to speak of now. Yadav is saying that people are, even in that day, people are taking to spiritual life. He's saying generally. So even in that time, generally, the mood of people is that they're taking to spiritual life with a cheating mentality. They don't really want a spiritual goal. They really want to material goals. Of course, they think that they will follow a spiritual path and at the same time they will cheat and get some material rewards. But what happens, of course, is that they are cheated by the ultimate cheat, Krishna, and they cannot get any real spiritual progress by that process. And even the material results that they get, because there's so many offences committed, such an insincere cheating mentality on the spiritual path in their approach to the Supreme Lord, ultimately, because even to achieve material benefits, one must have any benefit one gets is proportionate to the amount of bhakti within that activity. Even if one is a kami, a jnani, or a yogi, the knowledge that they will get, the perfections in yoga, even the material benefits they will get, depend upon the quantity of bhakti within those materialistic pursuits. And if they try and cheat the Lord, and that therefore that devotion is not there, then they even rob themselves of the material pursuits that they're after. So this is what to speak of now. Now it is there is just actually when Srila Prabhupada was in India, and he was 1976 or 77. He knew that he was getting very close to leaving this planet, and he was in India preaching very, very strongly. it was almost like the culmination of his mission, because he planned from the very beginning that, again, the Indian nation, they had turned their back on their own spiritual culture, and those who were actually pushing the spiritual culture, teaching Bhagavad Gita, teaching Srimad Bhagavatam, teaching yoga, they were all in it just for the fame, the material benefits. No one was actually trying to just teach Krishna's message for the service of Krishna. So Prabhupada tried to actually teach them Bhagavad Gita, but he found it was almost impossible. So he had a plan that he would go to the West, he would try and make Western devotees, and then he would take them back to India, and then hopefully if they saw that you've given up your culture, but here are the Western people. That they have accepted, so now will you accept? And he knew that yes, they would. And when he did that, they actually did. The plan actually worked. It was many, many years, and he thought it through, he did it, he put it into action, it actually worked. So then when he was back in India, on many occasions he was preaching very, very strongly, and so many people were coming to him and trying to present some bogus, watered down, nonsense philosophy in the name of Bhagavad Gita, and they would sit before Prabhupada so foolish, and they thought they would challenge him. Imagine how foolish it has to be. Right? I'm going to sit before Prabhupada and I'm going to challenge him who knows the Bhagavad Gita better. Who knows more about religious principles. As you say, a fool is not revealed to the open, and that they then speak some nonsense, and Srila Prabhupada cut them down. And that very, very easily. And some of them would fight a little harder than others, and they would make bigger fools of themselves. And others, gradually, you would hear, then after a little while, everything that they could possibly, all their bogus arguments, which are all a complete distortion of philosophy, so that some personal motivation could be presented. Why do we distort Krishna's philosophy? Because we have a personal motivation for these things here. A personal motivation for increase the duration of life, acquire fame, enjoy material opulence. In the name of these things, people were taking Krishna's philosophy and distorting it so that it was justifying their pursuits. Everyone. So the Prabhupada said, I am alone in this world. And the same thing that Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji said. He said, I am alone in this world performing my bhajan. Because Prabhupada, wherever he went, everyone was just presenting this absolute nonsense. Except for Srila Prabhupada, no one was just taking the Bhagavad Gita and just presenting it as it is without any motivation except for the fact of to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. Everyone had some motivation, something political, even people, their whole concept of Krishna. Generally, when people think of Krishna, they think of people are only interested in Krishna if they're interested in sex. Generally, we get that. But people, many people who have some, they hear about Krishna, not from ISKCON, but from outside sources. They're immediately attracted, thinking that Krishna is a big woman hunter, and that his philosophy is supporting their illicit sexual activities. Krishna is very famous, he has a whole philosophy, he is a woman hunter, I am a big woman hunter, And his philosophy very nicely supports my, you know, checks on appetite in this world.
What did I eat?
All of them. Right, see? All of them. Who is not doing that? That's a question. The Prabhupada said, I'm all alone. You know, he was just... everyone was cheating. Everyone. That was his point. Everyone's cheating. Now, he couldn't find people who just wanted to, you know, apart from what he did, those who actually took up the pure message of Krishna consciousness, of course, became members of ISKCON, and disciples and well-wishers. apart from that, everyone was cheating. Everyone either wanted to totally disregard the teaching of Krishna, because it interfered with their, you know, material pursuits, or they wanted to, in some cases, take on board the philosophy of Krishna consciousness because they felt that they had a better chance of, pursuing their material pursuits. If someone thinks, I will be more successful materially by rejecting Krishna consciousness, they'll do that. And if someone thinks, I'll be more successful materially by accepting it, or lip service, I'll do that. So, you know, if I think somehow or another there's more in it materially for me, then I'll become interested in the Bhagavad Gita and read it and teach it and this and that. But apart from people who just want to take Bhagavad Gita, the message of Krishna, actually take it to heart, Prabhupada said, I am all alone. Everyone is cheating. So many different variations. Here, now, one time I heard a lecture by Srila Prabhupada, not a lecture, it was a conversation, went for a long, long, long time. And it was based upon the Dehantara Pada Prabhupada. Prabhupada is saying that there are so many scholars of the Bhagavad Gita, so many so-called scholars, and they would all come and, you know, try and speak with Srila Prabhupada and present their so-called scholastic prowess before Srila Prabhupada. But, as you rightfully pointed out, it was very, very rare that anyone could understand even that one line of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the very beginning of Krishna's instructions to the Bhagavad Gita, or to speak of the rest, that you're not the body, that you're a spirit soul. It says here, in the purport, that an intelligent person should understand that if there is an eternal soul different from the body, then real happiness must lie in our eternal situation beyond the bondage of material nature. So, this is the first point in the Bhagavad Gita, that if one understands that first point, I am a spirit soul, I'm different from the body, therefore I am eternal, I've accepted a material body as a result of my material activities, I'm conditioned in this material body, As an eternal spirit soul, I will accept another body. An intelligent person will think, what type of body? What is my next body? And be very, very careful not to engage in activities that will create another material body. What to speak of a series of them. We won't experience birth, death, old age and disease. One who understands the Bhagavad Gita, this first line, they'll become very serious. That if I'm a spirit soul, let me come to the spiritual platform, the eternal platform, and never have to take another material body again. So, that's a common sense conclusion. You know? If a person understands, I'm a spirit soul, I'm not this body. If I engage in, remain entangled in material activities, I may have to take another material body. But as a spirit soul, I don't have to do that. I can remain on an eternal platform without accepting material bodies. So why not do that? That's a very logical conclusion. Just like if a person realizes they have $1 million, someone said, "Oh, you know, your superannuation, you didn't know it was there. You've actually got $1 million." Now, an intelligent person would say, "Well, if I had $1 million, why should I go on living a poverty-stricken life? Let me take that wealth and enjoy it." Right? In the same way, the person who understands, I'm a spirit soul. Let me live on that spiritual platform. Why live on the material platform of birth, death, old age, and disease? That's the first teaching, that's the first thing someone should understand when they read the Bhagavad Gita. Very logical, very simple. Krishna goes through in so many different ways to help us understand. You're a spirit soul, you're not the body, the material body is destructible, but not the soul. So many slogans. Now, therefore, why are people in the name of Krishna consciousness, in the name of God consciousness, are they taking the Bhagavad Gita in order to support some political activities which are centered around maintaining, preserving the material body and allowing the material body to enjoy and be free from, you know, so many material sufferings? That means that as soon as they think like that, they have not understood the Bhagavad Gita, the very first instruction. Understand that? If someone's just like Gandhi, and he was thinking, let us take the Bhagavad Gita and we'll preach the Bhagavad Gita in order to get a political message across so that India can become independent. So he's not thinking, you know, let everyone realize their spiritual nature and become eternally liberated, which is the normal conclusion, right? But let us take this philosophy and get some temporary material benefit if it's at all achievable. Ultimately it wasn't even achievable, and there's so much strife, and he did not want that the Indian people should be slaves to the Westerners. Now Prabhupada, you know, has been very humorous. He said, so whose process is there? He said, at any moment I can call 3 or 4 Westerners, they will come, they will massage me. They'll do anything. Whose process is better? My process or Gandhi's? And he was trying to get people to be free from Western, you know, say jokes like that. They were thinking, the Westerners, I would call them, they would come and I would ask, dandy people. Well, so he's saying, who's crossing the bridge? Even on the dual platform, you know, can you fail? What to speak of losing the spiritual opportunity? But they, you know, everyone is, you know, doing that. They, no one is taking the Bhagavad Gita and just helping people to cultivate their spiritual life, their spiritual activities. If at all they take interest in the Bhagavad Gita, they use it to somehow or another push some, you know, politics or, you know, some form of material enjoyment and get personal fame or what have you. and yet, these people who do that, they all claim to be scholars of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, all of them, they all claim. And people, not only do they claim to be, you know, they prop themselves up, big scholar of Bhagavad Gita, millions of people follow them. Oh, he's such a scholar, he's a follower of the Gita. And yet, the first lesson, they haven't understood. And then they sometimes, you know, they will question Srila Prabhupada about something else in the Gita. Srila Prabhupada wouldn't even bother. Don't even go there. We can't even discuss that. You haven't understood the first lesson. You want to go deep into the Bhagavad Gita. What will you understand? Just like this reporter, she asked Srila Prabhupada, the one who came to Melbourne. No, it was actually a young boy. He was also a reporter. This was another interview, press interview. And he said, can you see God? You self-realize. And Srila Prabhupada said, what do you think? And he said, I don't know. Prabhupada said, what is God? He said, I don't know. He said, so whatever I say, it doesn't matter because you don't know what God is and you don't know what a self-realized person is. If I said yes, what does it matter because you don't know? And if I say no, what does it matter because you don't know? So therefore it's a ridiculous question. So why ask such a stupid question? That's what he said. So there was an example that sometimes people would ask Prabhupada some question. There's no way Prabhupada could answer because, you know, whatever he said, they had no knowledge of it to, you know, get a grasp on what he was speaking of. So he just couldn't go there. And they couldn't get his first lesson in the Bhagavad Gita. If you're a spirit soul, you know, you know, it's natural to try and achieve that eternal platform and not, you know, that is your birthright. That is the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Cultivate spiritual life. Don't utilize the Bhagavad Gita to cultivate material enjoyment. So, in this way we see this is back then, in this day, many thousands of years ago, what to speak of now, everything is so degraded. As Prabhupada would say, you know, people have cow dung for brains. You know, there is so much sense gratification. You know, people are destroying their brain cells. They're destroying their brain cells through very, very simple activities. They're eating meat, some of them becoming meatheads. In this way, it is very, very difficult for, it is practically impossible for people to actually understand even the basic concepts of spiritual life. And generally, people are just taken to spiritual life or anything connected to spiritual life for some very, very foolish purpose, apart from this Krishna consciousness movement. And therefore, of course, Prabhupada was always, followed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's program that, we distribute prasadam. We distribute lots of prasadam. When people eat prasadam, when they smell the incense offered to the Lord, they smell the flower garlands, they see the deities, they just see the body, they see the pictures, they just, hear the kirtan. Really, they don't have to do anything, they don't have to think, but if somehow or another the devotees give them that Krishna conscious atmosphere, it actually purifies them. And gradually, over the process of purification, gradually it dawns upon them some of the very, very beginning concepts of spiritual life, that yes, I am a spirit soul. That should mean something to me. My whole life should be centered around that. If I'm a spirit soul, my entire existence should be centered around my identity as a spirit soul. There should be no other activity. Not that, I'm a material body and as a hobby I delve into spirituality. That's where they're coming from. But if they take prasadam, so therefore, we have Adrian here, a very nice cook, takes his cooking very seriously. I've had a few conversations with Adrian. Srila Prabhupada was very, the cooks in our society, they're, doing huge service, massive service. The prasadam distribution, very, very important. Again, I heard a conversation with Srila Prabhupada was in India, and some devotees had actually cooked prasadam that was a terrible standard. And the guests wouldn't eat it. In fact, I think they tried to feed it to some dogs and the dogs wouldn't eat it. Because Prabhupada was saying, he was so angry. And he said, very briefly, here Prabhupada say it, and he said, I am angry. I am really angry. Said, if you can't get ingredients, I will personally pay for it. I will give you the money myself. Whatever you want in that kitchen, I will personally pay for it. Get it. Good quality. You cook good quality, prasadam. And he was so, in his head, I was so disappointed that people came and they couldn't get any decent prasadam. He was really, really, really disturbed. Because it's the backbone. In some people know us as the kitchen religion. Which is a fact. But we have to understand that role is so important because, this is the nature of the mentality of people. That, people, generally, thousands of years ago, what to speak of now, their understanding of spiritual life and their spiritual nature, what to speak of God, is just so primitive, and their only hope is prasadam, hearing the chanting, the sankirtan, seeing the deity, seeing the devotees. Like this is very, very important. Gradually, that purifies people, and they can actually understand and take to Krishna consciousness. I'll read the verse again. Generally, human beings work very hard to cultivate religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and also knowledge of the soul. And their usual motive is to increase the duration of their lives, acquire fame, and enjoy material happiness. So, any questions or comments?
One comment. Srila Prabhupada is a guest of the spiritual world. And Prabhupada is a who can tell him? Nobody.
We're very, very fortunate to, you know, to have such a guru, Shiksha guru, you know, that we all share together. We're very fortunate. And again, you know, we should be intelligent and really make something of that opportunity, you know, to have someone of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada, to have so much instruction from him, you know, that should make, you know, a complete impact. It should make a revolutionize our entire existence, spiritually revolutionize our entire existence.
As you said, we have to preach what he has told us. We have to preach that.
Yeah.
Learn and preach.
Yeah. Just Krishna. There are different quotes in the various Puranas and the Vedas, and of course in the Bhagavad Gita itself, that you know, if one tries to properly understand Krishna's teachings so that he can then, he or she can present it as it is, it doesn't have to be high philosophy. It just has to be as it is, and Krishna will become very, very pleased. Now it's interesting because if you listen to Srila Prabhupada's, what is it, 3,000 or 4,000, you know, lectures, conversations, you know, right? Who's gone through all them? If you listen to them, one after another, you see Srila Prabhupada's discussions, because of the nature of people that he was talking to, that, you know, there was a lot on these sort of points, you know, just the fundamentals. You know, people sometimes misjudge Srila Prabhupada, that perhaps he didn't have a very high philosophical understanding because he just kept going over the same points. But we have to understand that even with his constant you know, illumination of these points, you're a spirit soul, you're not the body, from so many different angles of vision, and in so many different ways, you know, even how many people still could not grasp it and could not take the significance, I am a spirit soul. And of course, until a person actually, you know, takes that particular point as something, you know, vitally significant, you can't, it doesn't matter how much philosophy or, you know, shastra you cram into your head, it has no real value. There's a little value, but really, it's like, you know, the wedding party, right? The wedding party, they all got married, and then they all drunk in intoxication, and they all got in the boat, you know, at night time, and they were going to row across the river to the other side to work the boat, and they rowed all night. They rowed and they rowed and they rowed, and in the morning they found anchor. They were still there because they hadn't pulled up the anchor. So, you know, that's what it's like. People taking to spiritual life, reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or doing any other process, they're doing it like that. They've got that anchor on the material body. But I'm a scholar of the Bhagavad Gita. I'm the material body, but I'm, you know, very, very elevated in this church. You know, my position is very high. But they're just fixed in that concept. I am the material body. And until a person, you know, gets rid of that concept, I am a spirit soul, and when they do, then their advancement just takes off like a, you know, like a rocket. So, you know, therefore, Prabhupada was very practical, very difficult job, and yet he did it so well.
Speaking about the Dattatreya and Lord Buddha, like people are worshipping the Tatraya, and they have basically they will have an altar inside the deity of
Are you saying altars
yeah.
in that chant?
Yeah. Basically because we say that like it's an incarnation of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to argue with them to tell that okay you I mean they will completely worship only Dattatreya. So so how do you explain to them the thing that okay, if you worship Krishna then it's okay. They will say it's the same thing because it's incarnation of Krishna. So what's the problem?
The first thing is to if they worship Dattatreya, then there must be some there is a partial acceptance of the Vedas. So that's your foot in the door. That you accept the Vedas. So then to help them to accept the Vedas fully and not partially. And the Vedas describe in Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami describes. So do they accept Srimad Bhagavatam?
They don't read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. They are not into those things. Basically they worship because like their forefathers have been worshipping the Tatraya. And
so what shastra do they read?
They would read there is a Datta Puran something.
And Dattatreya
Charis
also.
What is it?
Dattatreya
Charis. Okay, so he has
like
a teaching.
Because it's in the Karan from Buddha, there are many examples of Dattatreya. It says that Dattatreya was the son of Ansuya and Ashwini. And Ansuya was very pious lady. She prayed to the Brahma Vishnu Mahesha, you come as my son. So
that's
this three come as a son. So that's why he has three days. But he was the incarnation of our Vishnu.
So that story is actually from the one of the Puranas. So they have to accept the Puranas. So that story is mentioned also in Srimad Bhagavatam. And I believe it's mentioned in the Puran where it's that story is from. Therefore they have to accept the teachings of that whole Purana. What they do is otherwise, if they accept that yes, that is the history of Dattatreya, it is mentioned in the Purana, but I'll accept that story and no other philosophy from the Purana, then immediately you catch them out as being foolish or cheating. Why would they not accept it? That is, then they're following the half a chicken philosophy that, we want the back part of the chicken because it lays the eggs, but we don't want the mouth part because it's too much trouble, we have to feed it. So within the Purana, there's something we like, Dattatreya, that is giving us our sense gratification, but there are other things there which is too troublesome, so we're rejecting that. But you can't accept part of the Purana, you either accept the whole Purana or you accept none of it. So therefore you quote the other references within the Puranas about the worship of Lord Vishnu. I guess in this way you can preach to them from their own shastras.
Talking in terms of worship.
And even you will find if you actually look at Dattatreya's teaching, generally you'll also find that there is a clue to his particular mission, just like Shankaracharya, although he preached Mayavada philosophy, towards the end he told them straight out, ultimately it's all word juggling, give it up, worship Govinda, Govinda. He wrote a commentary in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita should be accepted, So, you know, the word Jagadguru is there, and at the same time, in various Puranas and what have you, he describes his mission. He will appear in the age of Kali, you know, to cheat the atheist, to, you know, present Buddhism in the guise of the Vedas, that is there in Puranas. But they just, if someone is sincere, they will accept it. Same with Jesus, you know, he said there are many things which, you know, I will not tell you, cannot tell you at this stage. That means that there are other things to learn. That means that he did, you know, if there are other things to learn, then that should also be sought out. And he's admitting there's something more, something higher, I'm giving you something. So in this way, you know, even according to the Roman teachings, the Dattatreya Purana, which you call them, and what to speak of the Vedic Shastras, which are, you know, related to these teachings. If you understand them, then you'll find you have a very solid platform. You'll find that ultimately you'll get to the point where the only reason that they will reject the rest of the teachings is stubbornness and foolishness and a desire to be cheated. Intelligent person will realize that and accept. Just like the TM, you know, transcendental meditation, there was Mahesh, Maharishi Mahesh or something, transcendental meditation, they would teach the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Many students didn't know that there were 18 chapters, they only knew the first six. And, but you know, some of them actually became devotees. They understood, well, there's more to the Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, if like that, if the full picture is presented to them, the intelligent ones will take. Others, if you see that they're just going to be argumentative and stubborn and blind and foolish and they want to be cheap, just give them the shot. And ultimately, even the biggest Mahavadis, even the most simple people, they can't resist prasadam. and that prasadam, you know, it just gradually melts out. And that's why, as Srila Prabhupada, you know, understanding the nature of people in the sacred family, it is a huge responsibility for the cooks within our movement, always has and always will be, that they're very Krishna conscious. And that, you know, the prasadam that they're cooking is the most attractive prasadam that is possible for them to actually cook. So even if people don't know our philosophy, they just got to come in to get prasadam.
You mentioned Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You never saw Prabhupada mention what type of realization he had?
Yeah, he was a Vaishnava. He was a pure devotee. Yeah, he was a Vaishnava. Yeah, he, as far as Srila Prabhupada was concerned, he was a someone who was God realized, fully God realized. And, you know, what his particular relationship was with the Supreme Personality of God, whether he had a role like Narada Muni in Dasya Rasa, or whether, you know, it was, you know, Jesus described that he said something, you know, in heaven he sits on the right hand side of God,
the God is
the Father. There was obviously a very intimate and close relationship. But also, as although he was referring to the Lord as the Father, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's his relationship. Just like Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita teaches everyone that he is our friend, and Prabhupada teaches the same, that Krishna is our eternal friend. That doesn't mean that we all have Prabhupada and all of us have an eternal relationship and friendship. There are different types of servitorship. There's servitorship on the eternal platform in the spiritual world, dasya rasa, and there's a general mood servership that we cultivate here, but that's, you know, not the same. Cultivating that mood servership is not the same as cultivating Dasya Ras as an eternal, you know, sweet city or citadel. And generally, you know, Prabhupada, I've listened to many tapes, not all, so many, but many, you know, I mean, it's highly unlikely Srila Prabhupada would be speaking on such subject matters, you know, as we said, you know, revealing, elevated. You know, even Tulsi, even devotees, even initiated devotees sometimes, you know, they'd ask Srila Prabhupada, who's Tulsi then? Prabhupada would say, when you're a pure devotee, you know. Until then, chant Hare Krishna. You know, that was it, because it's just, you know, that sort of, yeah, there's no value in that knowledge. There's no value. Until someone realizes that there is a God and there is a spirit, soul, and what have you, that knowledge actually can be disturbing. People will, you know, even disciples, I've heard, you know, disciples of Prabhupada ask him to speak about his spiritual master in a very, you know, nice flowing conversation. Devotees have asked him, can you speak something about his spiritual master? He would. He said, that's not for you. You know, it's just, you know, these things, confidential subject matters, should, it is a regular principle that we should not give such, you know, confidential subject matters to people who are not worthy of that instruction. In the same way, you know, if someone has you know, an intimate relationship with their wife or their husband, you know, someone may ask questions about their married life, but you don't say anything, you know. Especially in this day and age, all the backseat drivers, as they call it, you know. But, you know, it's, but people who are very, very close and intimate and somehow have earned the trust and the confidence, certainly they will understand, you know, details, things may be spoken to them, you know, in confidence and friendship and maybe. But it's not just, you know, kiss and tell sort of thing. Any other questions?